And I call the meeting of the Agriculture Policy Committee to order. Ask the members that are here to take their seats. I think we have a quorum. And President Peterson, have you checked the minutes? Would you care to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm checking them as we speak, and I move the approval of the minutes.
Representative Peterson moves approval of the minutes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Carried. Committee members, today we have three bills that we're going to be considering. The first bill is House File 2051 by Representative Harder, dealing with county and regional affairs. Representative Harder, are you ready with your to present your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2051. As a member of the committee.
Yes, and Representative Harder, do you know where that should go? I think it should go to the Finance Committee. Is that correct?
Or that would, need yeah.
to the, so that should probably be part of their motion.
Yes, I'd like to move that it be approved and forwarded to the Ag and Rural Development Finance.
Thank you, Representative Harder, and proceed with to present your bill or discuss it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2051 is really here as a carryover item from last year, and that there was heightened attention drawn to the support that the state of Minnesota provides to our county fair system in the state of Minnesota as we were dealing with budgetary issues. And we as a committee defended that funding and found a way to make it work in difficult times. And so I'd like to, on behalf of the county fairs in the state of Minnesota, express my appreciation for your consensus on that issue and the creativeness in finding a way to make it work. The experience did heighten an awareness of the statutory provisions for county fairs and drew to our attention the fact that some of the provisions are antiquated. So the Federation of County Fairs in our state took upon themselves the task of modernizing and better expressing what really the needs are and the functions are of county fairs in our state. And the bill you see before us is an update of language that some of which dates back as far as 1905. So I have with me a representative of the Federation of County Fairs, and I'd like to ask you to recognize Mr. Jerry Schoenfeld.
Mr. Schoenfeld, welcome to the committee, and state your name and who you represent for the record, and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I represent the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs in this item. And what I can tell you is that we had met a couple of times in the December and January, I guess, in order to take a look at the existing statute. What we noted in the statute was, as Representative Harder had said, some of the provisions had gone back to 1905, but several of them were like 1927. And over the years, a lot of the provisions hadn't been updated. So really, what we tried to do in looking at the statutes was to say, since there are limited funds from the state, what kinds of things can help the individual fairs to obtain funds in other ways? So, for instance, there are, in the existing statute, there are caps that have been there for many, many years in most cases that designate, for instance, that a city or a county that might be willing to provide assistance to support its local fair had caps within the statute as to how much money they could provide. So we took those caps off and said it was really up to local situation to determine what they wanted to do in those cases. In other cases, there were simple updates. I think one of the references in the statute had gone back and referred to something that was 1957 or 1959, something like that. But we felt maybe that probably in the year 2003 or 2004 we could take off that reference from 1957. A number of other things. Basically, what you'll find throughout the the bill is an updating of restrictions, other kinds of things that are kind of bringing into the 21st century. For instance, traditionally, county fairs had always provided premium booklets that were written on paper. In this case, we've also offered, for instance, that it could be done through the electronic media, that you could provide it that way as well. Alternatives to try and bring us into the 21st century with some of these kinds of provisions. So that's generally what was done. It's not exactly just a recodification, but it's close.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. You mentioned the taking off the caps of money. Now, there's state money goes to the county fairs. Does this change the provisions of that in any way? I mean, were you speaking of caps on premiums or what?
Mr. Chair, it has an effect in a couple of ways, but rather minor effects, I would say. Under the statute, there is a requirement that says that that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture would prescribe the forms, for instance, on which information which would be given to the state. There's been some question about how closely it's really looked at once it gets to the department in any case, and it was brought up by a number of fairs that, for instance, with computers today versus when everything was handwritten some years ago, that, for instance, a number of the fairs used, like Quicken is an example, which probably many of you use to do their finances, business computer programs and so forth. So they asked that they be allowed to do that on their format rather than one which they have to do and then redo to plug into a standard form. And so one of the provisions that we put into the bill was to change it so that they could use their own format, provided that they provided the information necessary to be able to have the public look at their books and see that they were doing a decent financial situation. And so it doesn't really change anything relative to the money that the state provides. It does perhaps change a little bit as to what it provides it for. For instance, one of the other provisions in the bill also deals with, there was a long laundry list of what premium money could be used for. For instance, providing money for livestock premiums and crop premiums and the like. Today, the nature is that computer sciences and other kinds of areas are additional things that 4-H and FFA do at county fairs, and so it opens it up to, say, additional creative ideas that might be used for premiums. And so to that extent, it changes it. But in terms of changing the formula or the amount of dollars, it really doesn't affect that.
Mr. Chair.
President Harder?
I think you picked up on something that I would ask about, too, when the caps were mentioned. Municipalities who wish to contribute to the support of the county fairs to be unlimited in what they can contribute. We don't see a need to limit what a municipality can contribute to support their local county fair. And regarding sites and buildings, there was a cap of $7,500 that a county could appropriate for fairground property and buildings and expenditures on the grounds, and we eliminate that cap as well.
Thank you. Representative Blaine, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Harder, Mr. Schoenfeld, I like the removal of the caps of the bill. The only question I have is on Section 8 with the repealer. I'm just curious if the Ag Commissioner in the department is supportive of the repealer in Section 8.
Representative Harder or Mr. Schoenfeld, do you have a response to his question?
We can certainly bring someone from the department to the table. It's generally understood that the reports could be simplified and still serve the very same purpose as they are now, without requiring the fairs to fill out a totally different form. But there's someone from the agency who could speak.
Is there anybody here from the Department of Agriculture that would want to clarify this or comment on it?
Mr. Chairman, Members of the committee, I'm Kevin Alfrain with the Department of Agriculture.
Welcome to the committee.
Dairy food and meat inspection.
Maybe not. This maybe isn't your department, but do you have any
county fairs? I don't deal anything with county fairs.
No, I didn't think so.
So I am here. Paul Strandberg is usually the person who would be here from the department. He was unable to be here. He's at another meeting. So if I can get anything back to the department and get an answer for you, I certainly can.
Anything further, Representative Blaine? Or
no.
Any other committee members have questions of either Representative Harder or the testifier?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Harder, did the County Extension Service ever have a role in doing this before? Any of these reports?
Representative Harder?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl. This is a funding mechanism that's provided through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture directly to the local county fairs. The county fairs apply for reimbursement for their premiums distributed at their county fair directly to the Department of Agriculture. While the Minnesota Extension Service is inherently involved in the operation of county fairs, this arrangement that we're talking about for financial support is directed to the Department of Agriculture and then distributed by them to the county fairs. Mr. Schoenfeld, do you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chairman, certainly Extension works with county fairs a great deal, but they are not part of any of this arrangement, and they are not in this statute. There's no changes here to Extension within the statute that we're looking at, and so the answer is no.
Any further questions from members of the committee? If there's Representative Harder.
Mr. Chair, regarding the question cast by Representative Blaine, I think that's a good question, and I can give the committee comfort in that since that's a fiscal issue and this bill is going to the Finance Committee, this would certainly be an appropriate question to ask at that committee, and I believe the Department of Agriculture will be there, and if they're not, we'll certainly make sure that they'll be there, but I have reason to believe that they'll be at the Finance hearing.
Thank you. Is there no further questions? Do you wish to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Representative Harder moves that House File 2051 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Agriculture Finance Committee. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Motion is carried. Want to say welcome to you students, and glad to see you're here, and let's all welcome them here. The next bill on our calendar is House File 1732, Trespass on Agriculture Land, also presented by Representative Harder. So, Representative Harder, going to proceed to address that bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1732 addresses trespass law and biosecurity issues for animal agriculture settings. And I would like to move House File 1732 and understand that it needs to go on to the civil law, I believe.
I believe civil law is what I understand. Would you want to send it to them?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Harder, I see you have an amendment or two here. Do you wish to offer them, incorporate them at this time to get the bill in order you'd like it? Or?
Yes, I'd like to move Amendment DE2. It's a delete everything amendment, and with Mr. Rankin's support here, I'd like to walk through the changes, any changes I missed, if you would, Mr. Rankin.
Yes, Representative Harder, probably the first thing we should do is try to enact the amendment and then have you explain it.
I'd like to move Amendment H1732DE2.
Representative Harder moves Amendment DE2. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary? amendment DE2 is adopted, will be incorporated as to author wishes. And I also have an A3 amendment. Is that something you want to do at this time, or is that something
I'd like to act on that after we've had the discussion of the full bill.
All right. So then, Representative Harder, you can proceed, and we'll be working off of the DE2 amendment.
So
you go forward and explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 1, line 19 is the first of the changes. This language that says those species of animals that live under the husbandry of humans is meant to...
President Harder, are you talking about changes from present law or changes from the bill as originally adopted?
Mr. Chair, these are changes that were made as we adopted the DE2 amendment from the bill as it was originally introduced.
But I mean, these are changes to the original bill. They're not changes to the present statutes. These are changes to the way the bill was originally drafted.
That's correct. So that quotation on line 19 through 20 is new language. Then we had page 1, line 21 and 22 is language we had in the bill and felt it was more clear what we meant by livestock by moving the section up here under the definition. So this is language that was earlier in the bill but in another section. On page 2, line 6, the previous language that you had before you was lines the property, and we wanted to clarify that we didn't need to demonstrate intent that a person who enters the posted premises is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. And then that paragraph goes on to list animals that more specifically identify the livestock that comes under the application of this language. On page 2, line 16, the word roadway after the word each, so it reads each roadway to the premises. We're trying to be more specific as to what kind of entrance we mean for the facility. Then we had language in the bill that states language for signage at the entrance to the facility, and we want to be as flexible as possible. So on the end of line 17, we added the word such as, so that we're not being exclusively prescriptive, but to try to indicate the a format for the language. And is there anything, Mr. Rankin, that we should...
Mr. Rankin.
Make folks aware of that I missed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harder, I believe you have hit all of the significant things that were changed in the DE2 amendment as opposed to the original introduction of the bill.
Representative Harder or Mr. Rankin, this bill, this the amendment which is now the bill, is that all new language compared to present statutes, or is this, this is pretty much all underlined, but I mean, you know, we have present trespass statutes on the books, and is this entire bill new language, or is it changing some current language, under present statutes? I don't know, Mr. Rankin Mr. Rankin, could you clear that up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Harder and committee members, this in both the original bill and the DE2 amendment is all new language. Section 2 of the new language becomes a new subdivision of a section which currently exists, but it is additive language to the statute. Section 1 of the of this bill in its DE2 format is also new language that does not exist now in statute.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin. I see we have several people that have requested to testify on this bill, and so we'll proceed to testimony from them.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Heigerken.
To this amendment?
Representative Heigerken?
Yeah. To this amendment from Mr. Rankin, if I may.
Yes.
Interpretation. Line 8, the last word there. I'm sorry, a farmed retinue, or what exactly is that?
Mr. Rankin?
We have several classes of what could be called the exotic animals. We have the retinae, which are the emus, the rheas, and a few other bird types. We have the cervidae, which are the deer and the elk. And then we have the aquaculture, and in this draft we just said aquaculture stock rather than fish or anything like that.
Okay.
Follow up with that. That's what I thought it would be. Is this going to affect those? This legislation could affect those people that have the exotic animals, that have a petting zoo, for example, a wild game. I've got a couple in my district, wild game life. I know we have two bills going with exotic animals right now, and one of the authors, Representative Strawn, I have a very difficult time with it. And I have a bill by Representative Lindgren that I like, but I'm wondering if we are getting into the area where he's legislating right now.
Well, Mr. Heiger, can I guess I would just say this. Those bills I'm aware of, those bills are dealing with criteria and so forth of people that own these animals. I think this bill is dealing with trespass, which I assume would be unlawful entry by some other person on the property or, you know, where these are located. So I don't think it would be quite the same. You know, the other bills are dealing with restrictions and conditions for people that have that own these animals.
Okay, I'm just...
Mm-hmm. Representative Blaine, did you have something?
Mr. Chair, Representative Harder, I want to ask, the way the bill is written here, according to V2, page 2, line 5 and 6, person is guilty of gross misdemeanor if the person enters the posted premises. And then it on pages line or page 2, line 14 through 20, goes through the language on posting. I'm just wondering if you could explain to myself and the committee members what would be the consequences if an unwanted individual would be on this property if the land was not posted, and what is currently the the penalty that is in statute right now.
Representative Harder, you have an answer?
This heightens the penalty to a gross misdemeanor, and I believe it's a misdemeanor now for someone trespassing, but this raises the level of consequences of the penalty if the property is posted and it's indicated it's a biosecurity area. And we're trying to get at those who would have disregard for the safety of livestock in a farm facility, a commercial operation, who trespass on property and don't seek authorization to enter the property. This would give the landowner or the operator of the facility some protection against those who would not regard the health of the animals in the facility.
Representative Blaine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Harder, then, but just to be clear, then, the property has to be posted, though, at the entrance. Is that correct?
That's what this provision... Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Yes, Representative Blaine. Yes, that would be correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So then, Representative Harder, if you don't... If a facility is not posted, there's no penalty if people come in? I mean... is that the way under our present trespass law? If you have a livestock facility or something, and it's not posted, that means that if somebody enters, that it's not a trespass.
This does not change an existing trespass law. This establishes an additional trespass law for biosecurity and requires posting of the property. They inform anyone who is not authorized to enter the property that they need to. They can only enter the property if they have authorization or seek authorization before entering the property. And the sign, as we suggested, would provide information for the individual seeking admission as to where to go or who to contact, whether it's the farmhouse or calling a phone number or contacting a specific individual to get authorization before entry. Otherwise, if they're not authorized and the biosecurity sign is up, they are trespassing.
Thank you. Representative Blaine, any further at this point?
No. Very fine.
Then I think maybe before we go any further, we could have some of these people that have come here to testify to listen to their presentation. The first person we have is Tina Rosenstein, who is the Nicollet County Feedlot Officer. Ms. Rosenstein, welcome to the committee. And please state your name and who you represent for the tape.
Thank you, Representative Swenson. And for the record, my name is Tina Rosenstein. I'm the Environmental Services Director for Nicollet County. I'm also the Vice President of the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers. And so quite often I will speak for that whole group of people who are very supportive of this bill. We've always, since we've been a Feedlot Officers Association, have been very concerned about biosecurity on our farms, particularly after terrorism has come to the forefront after 9/11. We've been looking at people who would want to do damage to our country through terrorist acts. Jeopardizing our food supply is certainly one of the ways to do that. This doesn't address that whole gamut of actions that people would want to take, but it does go quite a distance forward in preventing people who maybe not terrorists but are maybe not real happy with how animal agriculture is moving and the direction it's going, and so would want to enter farms in order to build their case as to why people shouldn't be farming the way they're starting to farm now. This at least gives us some way to keep that from happening, and that's already happened in our county, and you'll hear from someone else later who that's happened to. So I would just like to say that we as county feedlot officers support this. I believe that this bill should go forward so that people understand it is not the proper thing to do to enter onto a farm where there are animals, where you could be infecting those animals and wiping out the livelihood of our farmers. Whether you know you're doing it or not, at least this makes you have to read, and you're not going to go there. So that's the support we would like to give.
Well, thank you, Ms. Rosenstein. Is there any questions of Ms. Rosenstein?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Harder.
Because of input from Ms. Rosenstein and other county officials, I'd like to move the A3 amendment and have an oral amendment to make to it. That would be H1732A3, and I'd like to amend it on line 5 after the word state. I'd like to insert or county so that officials such as Ms. Rosenstein.
See, we need to probably the first thing we need to do is move the amendment.
Right.
And you move the A3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Harder moves the A3 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then you wish to amend the A3 amendment? Is that the second, next thing you would like to do?
Mr. Chair, I'd hoped to amend it before. I wanted it approved with my oral amendment.
Well,
well,
we can take care of that now, though.
Good. I'd like to move that on the A3 amendment, line 5, after the word state, we insert or county. So it'll read, employees or agents of the state or county when serving in a regulatory capacity.
Representative Harder moves an oral amendment to the A3 amendment on line 5 after the word state, insert or county. All in favor of this signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary? It's adopted. So then Then we have the amendment the way you would like to have it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. So is there any questions of Ms. Rosenstein? If not, thank you and for your presentation.
Thank you very much.
The next person we have on our list is Mike Hansen, Cottonwood County Feedlot Officer. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you represent for the tape.
Good afternoon, Chairman Swenson, fellow committee members. My name is Michael Hansen. I'm the Cottonwood County Environmental Officer from Cottonwood County. Also wear a number of different hats, including Chairman of the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers, working along with Tina on that organization. I would like to speak in favor of this trespass proposal. I think what it does is provide some extra, hopefully some security or maybe peace of mind to our livestock producers outstate or wherever they may be located. The technology and livestock production has changed drastically in the last years. We're seeing larger number of animals on bigger sites, located kind of spread out throughout the counties, throughout the state, basically because of one of the bigger issues is disease prevention. And with this bill, at least that gives some teeth to some unauthorized entry, unauthorized introduction of some type of disease or organism that may hinder the growth or and or production of our livestock. And as Tina kind of alluded to, one of my biggest concerns has always been that if somebody wanted to cripple Minnesota or even the country, it wouldn't take much to do it through our livestock production enterprise. It would be simply a matter of introducing some type of disease, spore, or organism into a multiplier herd or facility, and it could be spread very rapidly. So, and as part of our function as environmental people and feedlot officers and P&Z planning and zoning people, we try and work with our producers to get the feedlots situated where they need to be so they aren't impacting environmental issues, other things, but also providing them some security. And I think this does that. And as feedlot people, we need to go through certain protocol before making farm visits and inspections and other things.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Any questions? If not, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And next we have Diane Thier, Nobles County Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. And please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Harder. My name is Diane Thier, and I am the chair of the Nobles County Board of Commissioners, located down in southwest Minnesota. I'm appearing before you today to ask your support for this trespassing bill. Last year I attended an Ag Task Force meeting, and I was told of an incident where people had gone into livestock facilities where the owners were not present. I have to ask you, what would have been the outcome if this was a person that was intended on bioterrorism? You know, in just 1 week after we found one single cow from Canada with VSE, the cattle industry alone lost $1 billion in 1 week. And this disease isn't even spread from person to person or animal to animal. If anybody has ever seen the film of what happened in Europe with the hoof and mouth disease that was over there and the hundreds of thousands of animals that had to be destroyed because of this disease, I would think there would be no question that we would support this anti-trespassing bill. This disease is spread through your hands, your clothing, your cars, your tires. This is why it's important to have some quality of control to who we allow on our livestock facilities. With the recent incidents of anthrax and ricin in our nation's capital, it is only something that I think is going to happen if we do not look at protecting our food supply. In May of last year, I know in Nobles County, I asked our County Board of Commissioners to pass a resolution making our feedlot inventory secure information. I believe we're the only county in the state that has done so. We were challenged in court, and the Commissioner of Administration was asked to rule on it. And last year, Commissioner Brian Lamb upheld our right to secure our livestock information. Now, this doesn't mean that anybody can't go into our environmental office and ask anything you want about any of our livestock facilities, where they are, what they do, and how many head of livestock we have. It only means that if you want to have the full list of 514 feedlots and the information it contains and receive a printed copy of it, you have to wait 5 days, pay $250, and pick up the copies in person. They cannot be electronically sent. We need livestock in Minnesota, and it's essential to our economy that we have it. If we don't support this bill, it will be devastating to our economy if something should happen to destroy our industry. Another, just a closing part, I'd like to know, we have so many ethanol plants coming on board, and one new one is just going to be starting in Jackson County. Where's the byproducts of these plants going to be sold? They're going to be sold to animal agriculture. If we don't protect our animal agriculture in the state of Minnesota, this industry also will not survive. So I urge you to pass this bill. I believe it's only common sense that we ask people who come on farms or feedlots to stop and get permission. With the livestock industry contributing over $11 billion to the state of our economy, I guess I would have to ask, why wouldn't anybody support this? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we have Rick Grumish, Nicollet County Pork Producers. He's a neighbor of mine down in Nicollet County. And Mr. Grumish, welcome to the committee. And state your name.
Thank you very much.
For the record.
I'm Rick Grumish. I'm an independent pork producer from Nicollet County. I'm representing the Minnesota Pork Producers today. I'm a third-generation hog producer, and I've raised hogs all my life. I'm proud of the work that I do, and I strive to do the best job I can with my livestock and the land and with my family. I'm here today because of an incident that happened this past year. It illustrates the need for the passage of the House File 1732. The situation that faced my family could have had serious consequences to my animals, their health, and the well-being, to my ability to remain economically viable. Trespassing onto livestock farms can cause serious animal welfare risks to a producer's swine herd, in addition to an economic devastation that independent farmers, such as myself, would have difficulty recovering from. The incident involved trespassing onto our farm property by individuals who wanted to photograph our dead animals. The website of the group that the individuals represented states their mission as eliminating animal agriculture. The main problem I see with strangers wandering onto my livestock farm is the potential spread of livestock diseases, both into my herd or dragging the disease from my herd to another farm. These individuals did not recognize the potential disaster they could have caused by entering and exiting various livestock farms. Or did they know the ramifications and wanted to just cause serious injuries to my animals? From the information we gathered that day, they had plans to visit other hog farms in the area. There are nearly 80,000 U.S. pork producers who are Pork Quality Assurance Level 3 certified. This educated program lists biosecurity among the practices necessary to maintain and improve herd health. It is less expensive and more effective to prevent disease than it is to treat disease. Pork producers devote time and financial resources into protecting their animals from disease and into keeping other vehicles and people off of their premises. The practice of excluding visitors from livestock is a major way to prevent the spread of disease. Last April, we had an incident where three individuals dressed in black in the early evening were observed by a neighbor trespassing on our property. He quickly called it to our attention. We came to find out that they were taking pictures of the deceased animals that were waiting for rendering services to come and pick up the following day. After discussion with them, it was pointed out that they were animal rights activists. At that time, the sheriff's department was called. Besides being equipped with cameras, they also had a global positioning device with the coordinates of our farm, along with other farms, locked into it. After lengthy discussion by the Sheriff's Department with the trespassers and also with us, it was unclear as to whether they could be charged with anything or not because the trespassing law was so unclear. So it was agreed upon that the pictures would be destroyed and also that the GPS system would be blanked out. They also received a strong warning as to never be caught in Nicola County doing this type of criminal activity again, or the consequences would be much greater. After this incident, I emailed fellow pork producers in the area. The following week, a fellow within the pork industry gave me a call and said that the car and the person driving it was also seen in Brown County doing the same thing. So this was not an isolated incident. For these reasons, I strongly urge passage of this House File 1732. Right here is the sign that the Minnesota Pork Producers had made up that we're proposing that each farmer should post on the passageway into their livestock facilities or on the end of their driveway. I would like to thank committee members for your time today. If you would like biosecurity information that is used within the pork industry, I'll be glad to get that sent to your office. I would also be glad to answer any questions or to serve as a future resource on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Grumage. I would like to ask, so this law enforcement or the sheriff's department felt that under the present trespass laws, they were unable to prosecute these people, or they were unsure, or I mean, in effect, they did not prosecute them.
Well,
is that correct?
The people that were trespassing my property seemed to know the trespass laws pretty well. They were well rehearsed in it, and they had the deputy sheriff so confused at the time that he really wasn't sure. He just thought what they were telling him was right. And so, yeah, there was the deputy didn't think that there would be any possible any legal thing we could do about them because we didn't have our property posted.
Thank you. Is there further questions? Representative Otto, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Harder and Mr. Gromarsch, I was listening to your story with intent, you know, they're disturbing stories, and the question I have, maybe perhaps for Representative Harder, if you have activist types that are maybe animal rights type people that are to trespass onto your property, I don't know, would this bill actually cover just somebody who isn't transmitting disease, because it says a person who intentionally exposes a domestic animal, and I'm just wondering if this bill would cover a situation like this where you have an animal activist coming onto the property who's just taking photos.
Yes, Mr. Chair,
yeah,
Representative
Otto. Representative Harder.
On page 2, subdivision 5, certain trespass on agricultural land, a person is guilty of a gross misdemeanor if the person enters posted premises of another. Thank you.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a lot of questions about the bill, but I'm going to wait for testifiers. But I guess, you know, situation, I'm thinking about really large, maybe feedlots and large farms versus some of the smaller ones I might have in my district. There's a farm by me that sometimes a little calf will get out and run around on the road, and, you know, you want to help them bring them back, make sure they're safe. And I want to make sure that there aren't unintended consequences for people that are trying to do good deeds. You know what I'm saying? Misunderstandings. And I would imagine most farmers would be happy that you return an animal from the road. But I'm just wondering if there's any designation for size. I mean, I wouldn't want anyone coming in and hurting any of my animals either.
Well,
Representative Harder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otto, this is, first of all, the regular trespass law is in force. And if the neighbor who's being helped by another neighbor wants to press charges, I suppose they can. I don't think that would foster good relationships. But if they have the place posted and the owner is there to give permission or recognize that there's help being provided by a neighbor, then I don't think there'd be charges pressed. I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts?
Mr. Grumage, any comments?
I agree with Ms. Harder about it'd be hard, I guess, to I guess the bill that we are concerned with most is actually the violators coming onto the property. Things as of the nature of what Ms. Otto said are probably a whole different matter than what we're trying to get across today.
Yeah, thank you. And Representative Otto, you mentioned the word intentional. I think that word is probably out. That was in the original bill, but I don't think it was in the amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
No. Any other questions? Representative Otremba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you ever thought of just changing the trespass law as it is? You know, now the trespass law puts the onus as farmers to do all the posting. I've thought for a very long time that it should be the visitor, the trespasser, that comes and asks for permission no matter what. And again, we're putting that burden on the farmer instead of, this is probably sort of arrogant, but this is our property, we pay the taxes, and why do we have to post and they can go on even though it's our property? A judge would have a fit if we went into their backyard and used their grill. Because they don't have to have their property posted. I mean, it's sort of a putting again another burden on us as farmers. When why shouldn't people just have to get permission? Period.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Otremba. That's a reasonable question and one that I thought of myself, because I think some of our city cousins don't understand that while we have many more acres than they do, we are equally as offended if someone trespasses or litters or takes advantage of our property in the country. This is part of a package of caring for livestock in the setting we have now, where we have more animals together in one place and where health issues are even more an issue. And this is not intended for everyone. If this is a program that a farmer can make the decision to implement, to indicate to the general public that we have high standards for caring for the health of our animals, and we want to protect our animals from the invasion of others who may introduce undesired illnesses. And it's part of a whole different kind of practice. I'm wondering if Mr. Grumish would want to add anything to that.
Mr. Grumish, you care to, then you're getting into the present press trespass laws and the whole situation. And I think I asked that question earlier. You know, if the premises aren't posted, does that mean anybody's welcome? I guess without asking, but I think that's kind of what Representative Otremba is getting at too. And we probably, this kind of goes along with the present statute and. But it's something that could be maybe talked about at some point there.
Mr. Chair, the sign here is just trying to make it more of a black and white issue instead of a gray issue.
Representative Otremba, anything further, Representative Otremba?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you. The next person we have is Mr. Bill Hartman. Executive Director of the Minnesota Born Animal Health. And I just want to say at this point that I see we have several members of the Board of Animal Health in the audience. They're having their board meeting today. I visited with them briefly this morning at their board meeting. I would just say welcome to the committee, and glad to have you here to listen. I'm sure this is probably an issue of concern and interest to them too, because you know their job is to try and monitor what health issues for the livestock industry in Minnesota. Mr. Hartman, welcome to the committee, and proceed with your testimony and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. And as you mentioned, we did just get done with our board meeting this morning. Both yourself and Representative Carter visited with us. And it is a very big concern to the Board of Animal Health, the security of our livestock premises in the state. So I've been working with Representative Harder on the language for this bill. The Board of Animal Health supports this bill. It is very important that we protect our livestock premises from highly infectious diseases. You've probably heard in the papers and on the TV and in the news all of the disease problems we've been having in the world mostly. Most of it hasn't been in Minnesota, but we've had exotic Newcastle disease in California. We've had foot and mouth disease in Great Britain. Now we're having some problems with bird flu in the East Coast and in the Far East. And these are highly contagious diseases and easily spread from farm to farm. So this is an important bill to try and address that issue and make sure that biosecurity on our farms is strong. Some of the problems that we could experience here in Minnesota if one of these diseases got loose, we just spent about $45 million eradicating pseudorabies from our swine population in Minnesota. And if one case of that disease was allowed to occur in Minnesota and then spread to many other farms, we could have that same sort of impact again. So we do support this bill and feel like it's a good one.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Hartman? Otherwise, thank you for your testimony. Chris Raddatz of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Raddatz, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Raddatz, Director of Governmental Relations for Minnesota Farm Bureau. We feel this is a very important piece of legislation. Based on what happened last year with the previous testifier that you've heard about, many of our counties, a majority of our counties, sent in resolutions through our grassroots process talking about strengthening the trespass law. And to some of the previous questions that were asked, I think it's important to remember that as we understand it, it doesn't change current law. Under current law, you don't have to post ag land to stop trespassing. If it's woodlands, it has to be posted. We view this legislation as an important improvement to the current trespass law. And we say that because it increases the penalty. And I think some of the groups that, some of the instances that have been referred to, they didn't care if they broke the law or not necessarily. So we feel it's important that we increase the penalty that this bill does. We really do encourage you to pass it with broad support and work to make sure that the bill gets to final passage, too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Raddatz. There's no questions. We'll move on then to Dave Preisler of the Minnesota Pork Producers.
For the record, I'm Dave Preisler, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. Very briefly, a couple of things I wanted to highlight. First of all, Mr. Gromerich, I think, did a good job of representing our position on the issue, and so I won't repeat anything that he said. Just want to point out that we did print, our association printed about 4,000 of those signs, and we've been distributing those to pork producers now all winter, and we'll continue to do that at no cost to them and basically as a service to them. And it's really important, and one of the reasons why we're not necessarily arguing about the posting requirement is that we want to make sure that it's very important for us that people don't just make the mistake of going on the property, because that's when the damage is done. So it's important to keep them off the property. Almost all of our membership are interested in looking at eradicating disease and keeping disease out of farms, so we're not having to treat it. And because that obviously is expensive, and people don't want to do that, they don't have to. And one of the only ways to do that is to keep people off of your property. That in many cases, you know, may not know that they're going to transmit something, but they could, and it can get very, very expensive. So thank you, and again, we are supportive of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Preisler. Is there any questions, Mr. Preisler, or Representative Otto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that I like your sign. I think it's really informative for the public. You know, when there was disease transmission in Europe, they said, you know, you couldn't wear your shoes because you could track disease on your shoes. And I think that I'm getting the intent of the bill now. The intent is to keep, you're going to keep the honest people out, you know, is what I'm hearing, is that honest people will stay out. The people that go, oh, my gosh, I could hurt the animals, like, you know. I don't know that we're going to keep terrorists out, unfortunately, because I don't know that a gross misdemeanor would faze somebody who wanted to come in and hurt our country or our state, unfortunately, unless we put up gates. The only thing that I wanted to comment on, and it's very nitpicky, Representative Harder, but I think, you know, we live in a different time right now, and a lot of us live in fear. And I think it's kind of the gun laws, and people go, oh, I hate the signs, you know. And I'm just wondering, you know, you drive through beautiful upstate Minnesota, and you see these, you know, these farms. And seeing a sign like they've produced makes sense, and it wouldn't really disturb me. But if I see signs that say biosecurity in place, you know, kind of your suggested language, you said such as, I think it changes the tone of the community, and it raises that fear thing again. And I want to make sure that we still have that. You know, do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Representative Harder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otto, I think I do. I also think it's a sign of the times. The agriculture has changed, and the needs of agriculture production have changed. And this is something that's being welcomed as a preventative measure for our producers. And Mr. Preisler indicated that maybe the signs isn't something that you go looking for, but because of the need in the industry to call attention to folks who may be uninformed, who will obey a sign, I think it's a very important step.
Thank you. Ms. Preisler, do you have any further comments?
No.
Any other questions? If not, Representative Harder, do you wish to renew your motion on the disposition of the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1732 as amended be referred to the Civil Law Committee.
You've heard the motion. Any more discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary. Motion to carry. The bill is adopted and will be referred to the Civil Law Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee member.
The third bill we have on our agenda today is House File 1864, Representative Junkie. And Representative Junkie, we'll welcome to your committee and proceed with your bill or your testimony or explain your bill, or you wish to make a motion. And
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1864, recommend it to pass and be referred to Health and Human Services Policy. And I also have a Delete Everything Amendment, DE1, that I'd like to move at this time to get the bill in the shape I need it.
You heard the motion. Motion is to adopt the Delete All Amendment, DE1. All in favor of adopting Amendment DE1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adapted, and so with that, Representative Junkie, proceed to explain your bill.
All right, Mr. Chair. There's some information here. First of all, some information in your packets besides the amendment. Members, I did put an information packet together. It's got newspaper articles from around the state. It's got some emails I've received. I sampled them. The ones that are marked pro, obviously, are for the bill. But to be fair, I did get a handful of con or negative emails, and I put a sampling of those in there also. And then in the back of the packet, you will see some statistics from the Center for Disease Control on accident on death rates, and then you'll see a CDC report on food-related illness and death in the United States, which we'll be referring to later on the back page. So, with that, let me quickly tell you the story of pickles, Mr. Chair, and usually that's the easiest way to go about it. Then I'll briefly explain the bill, and I'll be happy to answer any questions at that time. Last summer, out in Willmar, Minnesota, I was, as I always do, go to the farmer's market to purchase fresh produce and other farm-produced products. At that time, I was summoned over by one of the vendors who's been there for many, many, many years, Harold and Mary Larson. Harold and Mary Larson called me over, and they showed me a handout that I believe came from the Department of Agriculture website. And then was distributed to them by the farmers market people, and basically what they were asking was that they discontinue selling their pickles. Harold and Mary Larson, just so you know, sell canned goods. They have probably 50 different kinds of jellies and jams and relishes and pickles and other things. And I said, what's going on? Did you folks down there in St. Paul change the law or something? We've been selling pickles here, Mr. Chair, for years and years and years. And I said, boy, I don't think so, but let me check it out. So I called the Department of Agriculture and talked to Kevin Elfring, who's here today. And sure enough, which is what I always try and do, members, and I think advice is good, too, once in a while. I never want to bring a bill before the body if I don't have to. And similar to Hot Dish a few years ago, I tried to nip this in the bud with the departments before we had to go forward. Unfortunately, it wasn't the case. Indeed, it is in their guidelines. In fact, I have a copy of the website here. Foods that cannot be sold at farmers' markets, and again, I shouldn't even read this because it's going to bring up a whole nother, open up another can of something. Examples of prohibited foods would include pickles, pickled vegetables, apple juice, apple cider, salsa, chutneys, pie with meringue topping, any custard pie such as pumpkin, cream puffs, any food containing meat, and any product which needs refrigeration for preservation, any food which is acidified or hermetically sealed for preservation. So again, as I walk around farmers markets in this state, I can guarantee you that some of those products are being sold now. But what we're focusing on are the canned goods at this point in time. After talking to Mr. Elfring and realizing that indeed they were going to continue enforcing what they perceived was to be a problem, and by the way, the problem that was indicated that they're trying to prevent is a disease called botulism. And certainly, members, like with Hot Dish, I want to emphasize, we're in no way making light of the seriousness of foodborne illness or disease. What we weren't doing it with Hot Dish, we're not doing it with pickles. It's a very serious matter, and one that I think behooves a legislative body like ours to treat seriously. But again, I think we need to put it in perspective. Botulism last year, there were 25 reported cases in the entire United States last year. Out of those 25, two cases resulted in death. So that is a fact. If you look at the last page of the handout I gave you, you'll see some of the other diseases. I would point you, for example, to Listeria monocytogenes, or whatever it is. This is a disease that's carried in hot dogs and cold cuts, members, something we eat and our kids eat and our families eat. Last year, there were 499 deaths from eating hot dogs and cold cuts. So I think we need to put this whole thing in perspective. You know, we're not hearing an outcry to ban the sale of hot dogs in the state, but that's very much more serious than the two cases of botulism. They're all serious, but you also see the percentages there of foodborne. Salmonella is 30.6% of the cases, and it goes down the list. Botulism accounts for 0.2% of total foodborne deaths in the United States, so very minute and small percentage-wise. So what should we do about it? I drafted up a bill, and I certainly have had plenty of visitors in my office since it's been drafted. The DE1 amendment attempts to address some of the concerns that the various groups had, and in fact, I've heard back from some of them. Unfortunately, to some of the testifiers that are in the audience, I apologize. This DE1 was not available till late yesterday when we got it down, and maybe you did not have a chance to see it. But quickly to go through it, it basically states that one of the questions we had, and there are, I've learned a lot about home canning, members, and there are things called low-acid and high-acid foods, and that's a concern. I know Representative Harder and Representative Tremba knows about this, our food experts here on the committee. And we certainly want to make sure that we're selling the high-acid, or we're concerned about the high-acid. They're okay. Once you drop the pH below 4.6, that's where we get the good pickles that you all like so much that should be preserved in a good manner. By the way, I didn't bring pickles because personally I don't like them. I just wanted to point that out too. Members are wondering why I didn't have a row of pickles up here. I don't know what I would have done with them when I was finished with the testimony. But so we put the 4.6 or lower, so we're very specific on what products we're talking about. Number two on page one, line 12, the products are home processed and home canned in Minnesota. So again, we're talking about Minnesota products, not things that are moving over state lines. That was a concern with some of the canners and some of the other folks. Products are, number three, products are sold or offered for sale at a community or social event or farmer's market in Minnesota. Again, you can't put these products together and then cross over to Wisconsin and sell them there or Iowa or anywhere else. So we're not trying to usurp USDA rules or anything else. This is only for Minnesota farmers, only for Minnesota products. And we wanted to make sure that that was in there. We also have the signage in there, which I know some people like and some don't. Some people think that's even too much government intrusion. But to try and keep peace in the valley, we are asking that these folks display a sign that the canned goods are homemade and not subject to state inspection so people know exactly what they're buying. It's a homemade product. And then number five, each container needs to be labeled, again, with the name of the processor or canner and the date that it was canned. I think most of our canners do that now. It's a good practice. And certainly they always want to know when their supplies were put together. So we don't think that's difficult. The second page is basically making sure that we're not falling into, again, USDA or other requirements for these small folks. And then we put another interesting conversation came up, and Representative Erdahl, this goes to you mainly, and Representative Harder will be interested in this too, but one of the problems that I visited with the food inspectors, one of the things, and by the way, they're not the bad people in this at all, and they do a very good job out there. I'm not picking on them at all. In fact, we had very good conversations in my office. One of their frustrations this year is that in the past, when they'd come to farmers markets or church basements and they'd see someone who's a home canner selling their products, they would say, ma'am or sir, would you please go to your local extension office? And there are people there that can test your pressure cooker, they can look at your recipe and give you advice on safe home canning practices. Well, members, as you all know, our extension offices, you're not finding too many out there with a home economist in it anymore that can do these things. So some of these things come full circle, and as we cut extension services and other things, we're sometimes clipping our own wings here. And I try and address that because what we're trying to get at in this bill, members, is education. If everyone in this room is serious about preventing diseases in food, education is the way to get at it. This is not the last section is not prescriptive, but rather just asks that someone claiming an exemption is asked to urge to attend and successfully complete a better process school recognized by the Commissioner of Agriculture. So we want the Commissioner's office involved in this and helping us. If extension can't do it, let's find someone who can, and let's work with our community ed folks and others to put these classes together. Have the recipe and manufacturing process reviewed. Most home canners do that now. They're either using the Ball recipes or something else that's been approved. If it's a new recipe, we certainly would want it approved. And then we're asking the commissioner, in cooperation with Commissioner Health and Minnesota Extension Service, to maximize availability of this information to people. Again, members, by going about the ban of pickle sales and the fining thereof of people caught selling them, I contend that we are not going to prevent one single outbreak of any disease that would have been associated with them. Because the fact remains, these people still grow their cucumbers, they still stick them in jars, and if they can't sell them in a church basement or a farmer's market, they're still eating them themselves, giving them to their families, or handing them off for Christmas gifts or other things. So if there is a problem with the pressure cooker or the canning process or the recipe, we haven't solved one thing by doing what the department's doing. And that's what I'm trying to get at. Wouldn't it be much better if our food inspectors would be able to walk up, and I pulled this off a website, United States Department of Agriculture Home Guide to Home Canning. Wouldn't it be much better to walk up and hand this to a home canner and say, you know, we're concerned, would you make sure your processes are right and everything else? So what we're trying to do is prevent actual disease from occurring, but certainly, again, to help our local farmers market people, our church basements, and others where these products are typically sold. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop and be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Donkey. Do we have any questions at this time? We have several people that have asked to testify also, but if there's any questions at this time, we'd entertain them. No questions, I guess, at this point. Like I said, there are several people have asked to testify. The first I have is Betty Packer. Is she here? Okay. From the Minnesota Environment Health Association.
And Mr. Chair, she's coming up. I just want to state the committee did ask if there'd be some testifiers for it. I think our committee administrator is getting worried as the list was growing in the opposition. And frankly, I feel comfortable testifying on behalf of these folks. And certainly most of them are working people. They're not, you know, the government bureaucrats that can be here like we are. And so I'm happy to testify. And one other note, the local Public Health Association of Minnesota, that's the group, that is the food inspector groups, were in my office 10 minutes before committee. They'd reviewed the new draft of the bill, and they said they're A-okay with it. It's a fine bill according to their association. So we did get their support right before committee started. Also, Laura LaCroix, the director, was in my office.
Well, thank you, Representative Donkey. And you could probably stay up there in case we do have questions, surface, and so forth. Ms. Packer, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Betty Packer, and I'm president-elect of the Minnesota Environmental Health Association. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. There are some improvements in the amendment to House File 1864, and we're pleased with that, but we still have some additional concerns that we feel that the bill does not address. Our first concern is the $5,000 limit. I don't know about you, but $5,000 is an awful lot of pickles. I was calculating at $3 a jar, and that would be like 1,600 jars of pickles in my kitchen, and I'm wondering what I would do with them all. We have a tendency to agree with State Ag that $1,000 is probably adequate for the amount of sales that could be allowed. Our second concern is that the purchasing public is really not aware of the risk associated with home canned foods. They fully expect that the foods at sale at farmers markets and other venues are perfectly safe. A lot of them don't understand how foods are canned. They don't understand the processes of it. They've never done it themselves. So they're not aware of the risks. And I'm afraid that a simple sign just telling them that their home can will mean nothing to many people. Especially it doesn't communicate the risk to people who are vulnerable, such as the elderly, children, people with immune compromised systems, and pregnant women. There has been listeria found in deli pickles. A licensed facility in the city of Bloomington was trying to produce pickles to sell in their store, and State Ag and another agency went in and did a study for them and did find the listeria, so they discontinued that process. And so now we're talking about a licensed kitchen that has some good processes and sanitation standards in place. We're also concerned about our public that will be willing to sell at the farmers market in the city of Bloomington was trying to produce pickles to sell in their store, and State Ag and another agency went in and did a study for them and did find the listeria, so they discontinued that process. And so now we're talking about a licensed kitchen that has some good processes and sanitation standards in place. We're also concerned about our public that will be willing to sell at the farmers market. For example, we have Spanish, Hmong, Vietnamese, Thai, Chinese, Eastern Europeans, multi-ethnic African countries represented in our state, particularly in the metro area, and they may see this as an opportunity to make some money for themselves. We don't have any standards for them. We don't have any written materials for them. We don't have any training classes in their language so that they can use a safe process. And this indeed is a great concern of ours. Our other concern is liability. And I realize that these will not be licensed facilities, but We've learned from experience of recently in the Louisiana Department of Health that regulatory agencies can be held liable for foodborne diseases that result when proper signage is missing. In this case, it cost them nearly $100 million for oversight of missing the signs. So this brings a lot of unanswered questions. If home canners are not licensed and inspected, who assumes the responsibility to ensure that the proper signage is in place? If there is an outbreak, which state agency will assume the liability, or does the farmers market bear this responsibility? In the event of a foodborne outbreak, which state agency absorbs the costs of field investigations, lab costs, and coordination among organizations? And in the event of a commercial recall, which might occur if the immediate source of illness is not determined, how will the Minnesota Department of Agriculture be reimbursed for its employee time? We believe if this bill is pursued, it must provide require that home canners have liability insurance or that the regulatory agencies in the state are not liable. Minnesota has learned our public health lessons well. We are nationally recognized for the strength of our public health program. This is what the public expects, and this is what the public deserves. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. She makes a few good points, and we have addressed some of them. First of all, to the liability issue, we did talk about that, and we visited in our office earlier. And after visiting with Mr. Rankin, the food inspectors and others are already covered through general Minnesota statutes and rules, and that liability would go over to this too. There was no need to address it individually. They're already covered in statute, in law now. Nothing changes with that. So liability issue is the same as if they're inspecting a restaurant or a community event now, 4-H club stand at the fair. Nothing changes. We don't individually, for every issue that comes through here, say who's liable. Rather, it's a general law. And if you need more information, Mr. Rankin certainly has the citings and the statutes available. So we did talk about that, and you are covered liability-wise. Secondly, the $5,000. The reason that's in there is because that's what we have now. There's an exemption in state law for farm producers of farm products under $5,000. They're the ones that are exempted from the food licensing now at our farmers markets, and this just falls under that same guideline. So if you want to lower it to $1,000, you can do that, but then we'd have to lower everything because it's under that same, it's an aggregate. It isn't necessarily just pickles. In the Larson's case, it would be the aggregate sale, $5,000 of jams, jellies, pickles, relishes, the whole gamut of things that they sell. This falls under that aggregate. So unless you're just a pickle producer and seller, that's the case. And remember, these are products that you grow and can. We're not referring to anything else. You have to grow these to be under this exemption. You have to can them. They have to be your homegrown products. At least that is my intent. And so we're not talking about anything being done commercially. And lastly, just remember, members, any of you who have been in farmers markets around the state, we're not changing anything. We're simply allowing what's already going on. These people have been selling pickles for hundreds of years in our farmer markets, and all of a sudden this summer up pops this website page and it's being distributed out there, and now we're in a pickle, members.
Representative Cornish, did you have a question? Ms. Packer, or
a comment and a question.
All right.
One thing Minnesota is nationally recognized for is there's a book called the GGR, it's the Goofy Government Regulations. If you're ever in small business in Minnesota, like my brother-in-law, they come in there with these off-the-wall regulations. The other day was he had a brand new microwave there, and he was using the microwave to heat up things for catering, and the inspector told him they couldn't have it because it wasn't an industrial microwave. Just because it was brand new, it didn't make any difference. Anyway, it's a little bit off track, but Representative Junkie, I support your bill here, and I guess I would ask the question like the governor did out in Washington, show me the dead Lutherans. I mean, if you vote against this bill, you're going to be voting against all us Lutherans that enjoy our potlucks.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative
quickly to the liability too. Laura LaCroix, the director of local public health associations, did also visit with me on it, and I believe with Mr. Rankin, and they are comfortable that we don't need to do specific language. They are indeed covered.
Representative Erdahl, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few things. Ms. Packer, you'll certainly share concern about wanting to protect the people from dangers to their health. Of course, it leads me to a couple of questions about how dangerous pickles are. How many? Do you have any idea how many cases of botulism or foodborne illnesses that we've had in the last 10 years in Minnesota, and how many people have died from them?
You address?
We aren't
Ms. Packer?
Sorry. We aren't concerned with botulism with pickles. The botulism is would have been a concern if he would have continued to have the low-acid vegetables, but botulism is not an issue in this case. Unless the pickles are not the 4.6 pH that the bill requires.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One follow-up. For you, Ms. Packer, Representative Junkie, and any questioners who follow, if anyone knows of one person anywhere in Minnesota who's died of a poison pickle, I would like to know. Thank you.
Anyway, thank you. Any further questions? If not, thank you. Oh, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Representative Junkie. I heard an assertion. I wonder if I heard correctly that you intend that these pickles, the cucumbers, be homegrown. I can't find that language in the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Matt, Representative Harder, I'd be happy to look at that with you. Again, we got to go to another committee. But whatever the rules are basically for our farmers market, and I thought on the Department of Agriculture, I'd have to dig way through this pile of things. I actually read it this morning somewhere that those market rules, the exemptions and others, are directed at homegrown, home-processed foods. I thought the homegrown, home-processed was in there somewhere, and I'll dig it out and look and see where I found. I'll get to you on that. And if that's the case, we can make that insertion because that's what we're talking about. I'm not talking about someone trucking in truckloads of pickles from Nicollet County and dumping them in their basement and canning. They got to grow them on their site too, on their farm.
Thank you, Ms. Packer. Just a comment, we have 15 minutes left in our committee time. I have four more names here that have asked to testify. So I just kind of, Mr. Exner, you're next. Oh, yes, okay. Yeah. We're going to have two together, but just kind of keep that in mind as you present your testimony that we will be getting on kind of time constraints, but
I have some letters here for you from myself and from the National Food Processors Association.
You have something? You have a handout there?
Yeah.
You give them to the gentleman behind you there. He'll. Well, welcome to the committee, and please state your names and who you represent for the record. Please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Exner. I'm President and Legal Counsel for the Midwest Food Processors Association. And also with me today is Ken Sevchek, who's the Director of Technical Services for Faribault Foods and is a member company and also serves on our Food Safety and Technology Committee. Wanted to talk to you today and discuss our concerns with 1864. We just received the amendment earlier this morning. We're still reviewing that. I wanted to talk a little bit first about three main areas. One is our food safety concerns on this issue because of the outstanding food safety concerns with the potential for botulism. The second thing is the potential for the industry harm to not differentiating between home canned foodborne illness outbreak and commercially canned foodborne outbreak. And third, to try to distinguish this from the recently passed hot dish bill. With the food safety concerns, we, as we represent about 20 food processor members and operating about 20 facilities in Minnesota. Most of them are low-acid vegetable canners. We do have some meat members as well. And we have members in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois as well. And the main thing we have concerns about is the by sanctioning the introduction of home canned low-acid food products into commerce without verifying the proper training and food processing techniques, we're going to be unnecessarily jeopardizing the health and safety of Minnesota citizens. A botulism outbreak from home canned food products could kill people and damage an entire industry, from the public, a fearful public, not differentiating between home canned food products and commercially canned products. Now, I want to let you know we aren't opposed to folks out there selling vegetables, because I think people should be eating more vegetables. It's good for you. It's a good product, and we want that to happen. And that's not the concern from us testifying against this bill. But we request your support in opposing this legislation. Now, with the regulations for low-acid food products, use the best science available. And I think there was a question earlier with regard to why, you know, has anyone heard of any botulism cases? Well, I think part of that is because of the regulations in place have prevented that from happening. The last outbreak that our members could recall was from a tomato juice product in the 60s that from a commercially canned issue, and that was then addressed by the national food processors in their regulation and controls. The other issue with regard to food safety is that we go through a large amount of training in order to go through and properly process the vegetables for commerce. And I think one of the things that needs to be included, and this is in the amendment as well, as having a better process control school attendance being necessary to work on that training, because as Representative Junkie had indicated, education is key on this. You need to know what you're doing, and you also need to have the right technical equipment, which goes toward the requirements in the CFR to have mercury thermometers available, which we did provide some exemptions for that a number of years ago when the ban on mercury thermometers was introduced. But whether home canners might have access to mercury thermometers, a miscalibrated thermometer could end up causing problems as we move forward here. And lastly, I know that a lot of people are thinking that the hot dish, that this is similar to the hot dish bill, but I beg to differ, because of all problems and respiratory concerns and for a lifetime that can happen with the onset of botulism that could occur and if you underprocessed home canned goods. And that's far greater harm than any case of food poisoning from some bad mayonnaise occurring at a church social. And we feel that selling a shelf-stable food product to the general public demands greater responsibility and commitment to food safety principles and education, so that if you're entering a product into commerce, you should take those steps reasonably necessary to have proper education, training, equipment, separation of your area from your home, and do that. With regard to the high acid food requirements in the amendment, that is a welcome and a better role. We are looking at a number of things on that. I think there are some things I mentioned with regard to training that's going to be needed. The other thing that would be necessary is some record keeping requirements, so that it could be tracked if there was an issue going on, so that folks can find out where the concern is. And then also we had some of the same concerns with the threshold determination, insurance and bonding, and looking at what's next for reduced food safety regulation as we keep moving down the line. If we do potentially dangerous food products and exempt some of those out, you know, we're a bit concerned about where we go from there.
Thank you. And Mr. Sebcik, do you have some comments? if we can keep them a little as brief as possible, I guess. But
yes, Mr. Chairman,
just looking
thank you
at
very
the
much for the opportunity to address your group and representatives. Yeah. Yes, I also share the concern.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, Kenneth Sevcek, Director of Technical Services. I'm with the firm Fairville Foods, Minnesota company since 1895. We process both low-acid, meaning products that have a greater pH than 4.6, and also products that have a pH below 4.6, and certainly have applied a lot of research and study and applied best science to our thermal processes, whether they are dealing with low-acid as well as acid side. Certainly, I've had many years, approximately over 30 years of experience working in the canning industry, and certainly understand the regulations as they are presented in 21 CFR 113, 114 that deals with the good commercial manufacturing processes of products. Our commercial facilities are under the direct supervision of employees that have been to the course that was referred to. This is the Better Process Control School that is approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Commissioner. It's approximately a week long in duration, requires both lecture and performance requirements as far as testing as well. So certainly commercial facilities do have that. We have various structured HACCP plans, which would be hazard analysis critical control plans that deal with both biological, chemical, and physical procedures and assess the various risks associated with them. Certainly, Clostridium botulinum is a very difficult microorganism. Either needs to be eradicated as in thermal deactivation or prevented from outgrowth as you would do with a pH modification. And certainly the toxin is one of the most. Would there be any questions of me, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Is there any questions, Mr. Chair? Of these gentlemen? Representative Johnson.
If I could just respond to a couple points again, just to, again, to keep the committee on a straight and narrow keel here. Mr. Exler, who we visited with and had a nice time in my office, he's a good fella, talked about sanctioning the introduction of these products into our state. Let me remind members, again, we're not changing anything. I will point you to the article from the Mankato paper, which is the first one that you see there in your packet. And on the top there, they went to a church in Mankato and asked if they'd heard of the pickle ban, and I'll just read. "We've never heard anything about it," said Chris Walshlick, parish administrator of St. Peter and Paul's Catholic Church in Mankato. "The church has an annual fall festival and annual farmers market where pickles made by church members are top sellers. People love them. They're not there long enough for anyone to inspect them," Washlick said. So, again, to all the people that are coming down thinking we're somehow doing something new and unique and introducing canned pickles to Minnesota, members, it's out there. We know it's out there. People can. People sell. They've been doing it for hundreds of years. This is nothing new. And then I would also, again, like to relate the last page. Everyone's talking about botulism. Remember the last person came up. We've addressed that with the 4.6. But also realize botulism isn't just in pickles. It can be in asparagus, green beans, beets, corn, more unusual sources, chopped garlic and oil, chili peppers, tomatoes, improperly handled baked potatoes. Perhaps that should be the next thing we ban in Minnesota is baked potatoes because botulism can be carried in them. So again, we have to keep this in perspective. Yes, will someone someday eat a bad pickle? Yes, they probably will, and I'll feel very bad when that happens, but the fact is we're not changing anything, members. These things happen, and they're going to continue to happen. We want our food processors and our food safety people to be there to help us when it happens and prevent the next one. That's what we're after.
Thank you. Representative Harder, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Exner, this letter from the Food Safety Food... the National Food Processors Association, was that distributed by you?
Yes, I just sent that. I just received that.
In that letter, it's indicated the Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported 25 cases of foodborne botulism in 2002 and 11 cases in 2003. Do we have any indication as to how many of those are from home food preservation?
Mr. Exner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as far as the items that I could see from the CDC is that they've indicated that most cases of foodborne botulism are from home canned foods.
Representative Pennis, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. I find this a bit ridiculous. I'm sorry it's televised because it get out to Minnesotans and they see that we're wasting time talking about pickles. Now, I don't think it's a function of government to protect one from oneself. And so if I can my own pickles, if I pass them on, if I sell my pickles, there's usually a risk involved. And frankly, I've had relatives get a good staph infection while having surgery. And, you know, I don't know if we're cleaning up on that or not. But let's get on and get this over with. It's a little bit a waste of time.
Thank you. And thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. Well, I have two more names here, and we're just about out of time, but if we could have something quickly. Dr. Edmund Zotola from Cook, Minnesota, if briefly, and then we have Kevin Alfring from the Department of Ag. If we could, I'd like to get this finished for today.
I'm used to lecturing for 45 minutes, so I don't know if I can get it down to five or not.
Well, we hope so.
I want to thank you for allowing me to be involved with your deliberations and allowing me to share my concerns with you. I'm Edmund A. Zotola. I'm Professor Emeritus of Food Microbiology. I retired from University of Minnesota in 1997. I spent 31 years on the faculty. My first 18 years were spent as an extension food microbiologist. I was responsible for food safety programs that included home canning of meats, vegetables, and fruits. I directed a three-year research program in home canning that looked at home canning processes. Our results brought about changes in the recommendations for home canning that come out from the USDA. And incidentally, Representative, USDA has nothing to do with regulating home canning or canning. That's done by the FDA. USDA simply puts out the recommended methods. I was involved in teaching principles of home canning to county extension staff and developed training methods for the use and teaching home canning to their clientele. In addition, I was involved with the development of the Better Process Control School for commercial canners. This training program is required for all supervisory personnel in commercial canning factories. I'm a recognized process authority for acid foods. I should qualify my comments by indicating to you that I have no problems with individuals at home canned foods for their own use, as the only ones in harm's way are their own family. When they want to sell their home canned products to others, it becomes a major public health problem. I have several concerns about this bill, and the primary one is that incorrectly processed home canned foods will be placed in the marketplace, resulting in outbreaks of botulism, which is a very serious illness, usually results in death. There's one thing that you should understand about botulism, and that's you only get one case because you usually die. Mortality rate is extremely high. The poison, the toxin, the poison that is developed by this organism is extremely lethal. It's been estimated, and I don't know who did this estimation, but it's been around for years, that if you had 8 ounces of purified botulinum toxin, you could kill about 3 or 4 billion people. Now, it's been mentioned here several times that there has not been any botulism cases in Minnesota. Well, I think that's tells you that somewhere along the line, our home canners have gotten good instructions, and I like to think that the Minnesota Extension Service is responsible for that good instructions. The difference between home canning and commercial canning is that in home canning, there are no safeguards in place to assure that the home canner has followed the process. You can trust your neighbor. I have a neighbor I wouldn't trust. But, you know, the thing that concerns me is that home canners are very creative. And I've run into this a lot of times in my past years, in my other life. They'll change the recipe. They'll reduce the amount of vinegar because it's too sour. Or they'll add more sugar. Or they'll do all these things that aren't in the recipe. Now, what happens is when they do that, this changes what happens when it's processed. It's not just simply putting cucumbers in a jar, pouring acid over them, and putting them in a boiling water bath. The heat penetration rate is influenced by how many pickles are in there, how many cucumbers are in the jar, it's how much liquid you have in there. There are so many things that could go wrong in the home canning process that to allow carte blanche for home canners to sell their foods, to me, is a very serious error. Someone mentioned crazy Minnesota laws, and I would agree with him that if this is passed, this would fit right in there. Now, I think it's a noble process that you've come to the conclusion that we have to do something to help these home canners. And if we want to do that, then I think that the home canners should have to do exactly the same thing that the commercial canners have to do, and that's to take this better process control school. Now, the better process control is not something that you can do in the church basement. It's a 5-day course. It involves experts in each of the points in there. You have to take examinations. You have to pass the examinations, and then you get a license or a certificate that you have passed this stuff. And you should be aware then of the problems that can happen when you thermally process a product. Thermally processing foods in the hermetically sealed container is not a simple process. And there are people at home can that have absolutely no concept of what they're doing.
Mr. Zotto, could you, I think somebody else might be using this room, I'm not sure, at 2:30, so.
Anyway, you have a copy of a bulletin on botulism I wrote back in 76. The only other thing I want to say is history repeats itself in the 70s. Some of you may remember that in the 1970s there was a significant increase in the amount of home canning of foods throughout the United States. For some reason, there was a movement to do this, and as the amount of home canning increased, the outbreaks of botulism caused by home canning also increased. Now, my concern is that if you pass this bill, will we see that same increase in home canning, and will we see that increase in botulism?
Thank you, Dr. Zotola. Mr. Elfring, did you wish to testify for a minute or two? Otherwise,
I would be glad to try and answer any questions.
Mr. Elfring is indicating that he doesn't need to testify. Is there any questions of Mr. Zotola? Representative Westrom.
Professor, I don't know, you cited a lot of things, but, I mean, where are the facts? And the gentleman before you said most of the cases are with home cannings out of 11 in last year. I mean, 11 isn't that many to begin with. I mean, where do you get facts to say most of them?
Well,
Dr. Zotola.
Let me answer it this way. Botulism is such a rare incident. And the symptoms of botulism mimic other diseases. Strokes, heart attacks, intestinal disturbances. And by the time the doctor figures out you've got botulism, it's too late. Okay? The reporting system for botulism is not the same as this for other foods because it is so rare. Now, do we want to pass this bill and maybe have Minnesota become a hotbed for botulism outbreak? I don't know if that will happen. The representative here thinks it won't. My experience in the area says that something will happen. It may not happen for a year. It may not happen for 15 years. But when it does, we'll become famous again as the state that allowed botulism to recur.
Thank you. Representative Junkie, I understand there's another committee coming in here at 2:30, so we're going to have to move. But I just remind the members that if we pass this bill, it's going to be going to the Health and Human Services Committee, and so we can keep that in mind. But with that,
Mr. Chair, I have talked to some of the testifiers and agreed to visit with them after they've reviewed the amendment because some of them didn't have a chance to do that. So we're happy to address anything that they may have. Also in your packets, by the way, I have a letter from O. Peter Snyder, who was a assistant professor at the University of Minnesota Food Science Department from 75 to 82, and he's supportive of the bill.
Thank you.
You'll note in his letter he also states that they should be trained.
And we talk about it in our bill, too. Yeah.
Representative Weston, did I cut you off?
Mr. Chair, I mean, I guess it's, let's vote. We aren't going to send everybody to school just to can
our grandparents can teach us. They were better pickles than we get in a store nowadays.
With that, Representative Junkie, do you care to renew your motion?
I renew my motion, recommend a pass, and move to Health and Human Services Policy Committee.
With that, if there's no any further questions on the bill, otherwise, all in favor of passing this bill on to the Health and Human Services Committee, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried, and I think remind the people that testified that there will be another opportunity at the next committee to, if you wish to make further testimony in regards to your concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members, and we will have more bills next week. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.